Yeah, so thank you for the opportunity to speak in front of you. We saw the call for participation and it said, bring your favorite speaker, bring your favorite artist to Congress. And that was my, my initial thought, Frida, you need to come on stage here. So we have sort of started in 1965 Frida has sort of been starting in 1965 with this 60 years movement. It actually started a little earlier. We will also talk about a few other things that are often forgotten or lost possibly. So we will try to provide some overview of the history of our topic with a lot of personal experience. Thank you. We will try to also include some dynamics of power, because I think a lot of you might be interested in that. And hopefully we might also give you some approach on how to further pursue this topic. We will try to keep the art theory part a little bit moderate, although you could probably do a lot more on that if you wanted. And another question that we cannot answer is, what is art? That could be a talk of its own, and it would not end, probably. So, what we're looking at is a very broad timeline, which I tried to summarize here, or which we tried to summarize. We will look at three general phases. We will start with looking at the developments that culminated into creating this sort of discipline, and then look at what happened next, so you know where we are right now. There is a lot of different words being used here. So we've got algorithmic art, which is what we use, which Frida prefers, and I just took for granted. People also use digital art, generative art, or computer art. A lot of these actually do not need computers. So if you have some idea of how to create a picture, with your pen, and you know there's some rules I need to follow. I'm coming from theory, so algorithms, that's algorithmic art already. Now we will look at the stage where this started to happen with computers, and we will just dive into the first exhibition of Georg Nees in 1965. Those are two of the images that were on display there. It was actually in a rather unusual place for an art exhibition, in the Philosophical Institute. Some question that was asked there was, I will do it in German first, there was a question, I would do it in German, on the originality of this new type of art.
The originality. All art that is called art is original. Otherwise, it's not called art.
But now...
That'd be my answer.
But now there's the question, can a computer draw like me? Someone asked there, an artist.
Yeah, of course not. Never. Never. Whatever people nowadays do, ChatGPT or trivial stuff like that, we must be careful, I believe, when we talk about something that is correctly called art, not to make a machine of whichever kind responsible for the originality of what we see on paper or on screen or in whichever other way. Why do I stress this so much at the beginning of this little talk or discussion? Because there is a lot of totally false belief about what computers can do when it comes to producing art. It's absolutely horrible from my point of view, who is responsible for having done in 1963, 65, some of the first drawings by computer.
So, given that question on can a computer draw like me, what was Georg Nese's answer?
Yeah, of course not. Never. No? Because we are intuitive, and there is no single atom only of intuition in a computer being forced to do something that it does not want to do. It doesn't want to draw. It wants to calculate and not to draw. Computers are machines to calculate and nothing else. Absolutely and never. Never in all our lives. I want to make that extremely clear. It would be fantastic if you left this room in some while from now and were convinced that one of those who forced the computer to draw claims that the computer does not want to do this. Let me alone, my computer tells me, let me calculate. We'll get back to this, because you probably want to ask some other questions, but I'll come back to the computer and the human in their respective responsibility for what we get as a drawing.
And we will actually get to a drawing, because that was also quite new. Computers have been around, well, in very early stages, for some 20 years back then. Very limited amounts, but a new development that was done by one of the founding fathers of the computers was the so-called graphomat, which was a new device mostly for things like architecture, or the first thing was actually plot dividing on German soil. They've got bureaucracy for that. So they created this machine. And I've got something similar here, which should help us in understanding how it works. So I will tell this machine now to draw something that happened before. And it starts moving now. It's based, it has two motors that control those black ropes down there. And effectively what it does, it has two types of movement, one with the drawing arm, Zeichenarm, we used to call it, in one direction, and the other is with the Zeichenkopf, the drawing head, which allows the other axis to be moved. And then there is a feature that we currently do not see, because this is a continuous line, that the pen can be moved upwards and downwards, and that allows the machine then to create any sort of line drawing. I will now stop this and return to our slides. If you want to do that yourself, there's also workshops on here. We saw the start of another work that was also displayed there, sort of. But we'll also come back to something else that happened at that exhibition or in the consequence, and move over the Atlantic. Because more or less at the same time, there was another art exhibition in New York, in this case, the Howard Weiss Gallery, and the New York Times had an interesting claim. The first exhibition of computer art, which, well, took place 2 months earlier in Stuttgart. So, but it's interesting that we have sort of similar developments. The computational capabilities were fairly similar on both sides. They had a completely different approach on how to create those images. They had a cathode ray based setup, where you would basically use one of those old tube-based screens and have then a film on top, so from photography, basically, where it would then react with those chemicals, and then you have the full stack of making those small pictures larger from photography. So that was their approach. And we see something that's also starting to take place, where there could be complete talks about, where we see the current developments in art having an effect. So we see here two pictures. One of them comes from the area which we could call concrete art, Konkrete Kunst in German. I'm not sure if it translates to concrete art, actually. We now have the, like, we don't have landscapes anymore. We have things that are visually interesting. And what Michael Knoll now did in his exhibition was to have two pictures, one done by Mondrian, Piet Mondrian, who was like a famous painter, who did an actual painting. And he, Knoll, created a program that would produce a similar image. Now, you can try to guess which of these was done by the computer and which was done by the machine. This is basically one of the very first implementations of a Turing test. And, well, there's some ways you might be able to guess it, perhaps. It's the center picture that was created by the computer. The other one is an original. So it's not a perfect round shape, the computer version is, and so on. And, well, you can modify the program, have some other lines there. Knoll actually did that, so that's also an interesting development that you can quickly create new art. Now.
May I add something commenting on these two? Most likely there are some amongst you who recognize the left one as a Mondrian drawing, Piet Mondrian. The right one is the computer. You immediately see that the computer drawing that was supposed to be a simulation of the Mondrian is just crap. Should I say so? You see, I cannot point because I'm too small, but when you go up here, then you see several horizontal as well as vertical strokes very close to each other. Take a look at the Mondrian. Nothing like this happens there. Nothing, right? So the computer, having been programmed such that Michael Knoll, the programmer here, told the world that this is a simulation of Mondrian, which just means that a simulation is a simulation and nothing else. So it's crap. In the world of art, it should be forbidden. No? Of course, nobody is stupid enough to forbid anything, because if somebody wants to do something like this, okay, let him do it. But the fact that then this is called art, to me, is an insult. Why?
Well, let's perhaps not get too far
because
into the question what art
actually is.
Yeah,
there is no intuition here. It's only simulation, no? Okay. Stop.
I think this is also possibly some sort of art, but let's leave it there and discuss if this is actually art, the third exhibition, your exhibition, not only yours, but also of Georg Nies, who did the first as well, so you had a joint exhibition. How did this come to pass?
In Stuttgart, where I was a student and later working there. In Stuttgart, in the computing center, I did things using computers to draw. I had the job to develop software that would be used by engineers and architects to do their technical drawings. In the process of testing that software that I now had finished, in that process, I decided, well, I don't do technical drawings. I try to do artistic drawings, drawings of an aesthetic impulse. I wanted that those drawings, they should be judged about in or from the point of view of aesthetics and not from a technical drawing. And these two that you see here are two from 1965.
Now you have those pictures and you go to an exhibition at the Philosophical Institute and see there's such an exhibition. What was your first thought?
What was my first thought?
Yes.
Nice.
And your second thought?
I was convinced that nobody in the world is doing anything similar.
I mean, you did.
Yeah. When you do something of which you know that nobody else is doing it in a similar way, there are some few only who do similar things, but you are arrogant as you are, convinced that your drawings are way better from an aesthetic point of view, then you live your arrogance. I would stand by this because somebody who wants to be an artist must be arrogant. Otherwise, I have done something here. Do you like it? No. Hello, I have done it. If you don't exhibit it, okay, I'll go to the next gallery. the artist, let me say that one sentence. The artist is, in a way, so stupid that they don't allow self-critique. And I'm glad about being arrogant at the same time being self-critical. I don't believe that I'm better than anybody else.
Well, about the arrogance part, taking a closer look, there's actually a very small signature, which arrogant people might have made a little bit larger. So what did you put there? Who made this picture?
Yeah.
This
painting? Everybody knows that as an artist, you must sign, that's the most important act, your images, your art, sure. No? Since I've had forced the machine to do, for instance, these two drawings, when it came to, now how do I do the signature? I doubled it. On the front of all my images from that time, the 1960s, have this in my own typography signature. However, on the back, I signed by hand. Clearly, because no art critic would believe me with that. No, everybody can do that. Nice little stories that are not important, but in early computer art, something happened that should not have happened, but it did, and I'm proud of it. No, because we challenged the world of art by doing something that soon enough critics accepted as being of aesthetic quality. However, what the hell should we now, how should we react since a machine is doing this? This is impossible. That was a real great challenge. And some who were serious enough and maybe friendly also, some in the world of art really had a difficult time by the time. This is all gone now because 80% of all images nowadays are at least to some extent digital. To some extent, not all 100%, but the digital technique has taken over and has become so dominant that you find hardly any images that had not been influenced at least to some extent by computer technology.
You mentioned this being started to become accepted by critics. I think you also told me that someone was looking at the similarities of your geraden Scharen over there, so those lines on two existing arts. Do you remember who that was?
No. Critics wonder,
the similar artist, I mean. The artist, not the critic.
Oh. My wife then was an artist. Therefore, I was together each night with her friends from the Academy of Fine Art. No? So I was wearing water on both shoulders, algorithmics and aesthetics. No? And by being friends with real artists who were unfortunately not as famous as I became, was fantastic. No, because my world, my friends were of both kinds. In the computing center, the boring engineers, no? And in the evening, when we were drinking in some pub, no? The artists from the Fine Arts Academy. That is, Michael Noll was not, I'm the only one who lived through such a double time. Fantastic. I wish to all of you that you have once in your life for only 5 years or 10 such a chance, no? Being a part of two different communities that changes your entire thinking.
Yeah. moving back again to the public perception. Now only, well, more or less a year later, there were already some other things some other media picking this up, and another exhibition that was actually doing something new again. In art, we do new things, or we try to do that. So now we have music, text, and images by four different people. I will try to give you an expression of text generation back then. You can judge whether it has improved significantly or rather insignificantly. I will just do the start and the end. So this is an auto-poem poetry. Actually, that was something that people also typed in a lot early, in the early stages of this new tool that came up. Oh joy, chaste snowflakes rejoice. They make music at Christmas times, it read. And it ended with, are violins golden and candles joyful? No. It appears and shines everywhere and somewhere. I'm not sure if that makes too much sense. Perhaps we need to improve the algorithm to version 5 or something. But we had those interesting combinations in the text area. And the interesting thing is that those poems were actually done quite a lot earlier, just not in art exhibitions. So I think for like 5 years or so, we had them appearing in magazines where those generated poems had some small readership. Okay, something else that happened was a critique on Darmstadt.
How to begin? Take that text. Text is linear. Music is linear. Graphics is two-dimensional. Therefore, text was the first that people selected, some only, and produced by computer texts of quite a good quality. Music was even a little earlier, 2 or 3 years. This is in the early 1950s when that happened. Aha. Graphics, because of its two-dimensionality, needed longer. No, it's a bit more difficult to think in a way that the computer would have to think, quote-unquote, in order to do graphics, two-dimensional aesthetic objects in comparison to the linear ones, text and music. And so history went, indeed. Now, texts were funny. No? When you read this, it's funny, it's nice. Oh joy, Chase, I read it in German. Oh Freude, keusche Schneeflocken jubeln. No human writer would write such a crap. But the machine that Gerhard Stickel, he was the author of that, the programmer, if you like. What Gerhard Stickel had done was he had written into programs little schemata how to organize words such that they seem to make sense, even if the sense is somehow twisted. And that's the result, one of the results he did. Nobody would accept this as poetry. I don't think so. Not really. It's a nice little, it's not really Dadaist, but the Dadaists would be the first to perhaps do something like this. No, it's nonsense. Nice. No? many of you know the name of the Dada is Kurt Schwitters. You know it. I must say that in German, the quote, "Es tut mir den Unsinn so leid, weil niemand sich ihn kümmert." Isn't that fantastic?
And that is also a great transition to something that also happened, which is television. We are now in another medium that's, in a sense, three-dimensional. So we now have moving pictures of a film team of the even still running format Panorama in the German television, coming to your faculty, your university, looking at how you at you creating those pictures.
Yep.
And what exactly was your thought when they asked, "Kann die Maschine auch was anderes als gerade Linien? Can this machine also do other things than straight lines?"
Yeah, that was a nice little event. No, of course I was flattered like hell that Panorama, that was a political, cultural magazine in first program, ARD, yeah, that they came, oh, they had heard of this guy in Stuttgart is doing something, so they were curious, and nice, here they forced me to do this. Show us how you write a program. There you see it. I cannot read it anymore. So they were just astonished by the fact that galleries had accepted the drawings I had forced the machine to do and exhibited them. And I tell you, oh, that's a nice little anecdote, Michael Knoll in the US, close to New York where he lived, Murray Hill, he put the copyright sign on his drawings. I would never have thought of anything like that. How stupid must you be? Because he hoped that from his exhibition at Howard Weiss Gallery in New York, a lot would be sold. And he had a contract with the Howard Weiss, the owner of the gallery. What to do when things get sold? Nothing got sold. I never thought of anything like this. No, because I was an artist doing my things and some gallery showed it. And I, of course, sold immediately.
And that were you even asked?
Sorry?
Were you asked if your art could be sold?
Yes, of course. They approached me. No, this is happening often. Now, outside of the gallery, because they know that the galleries, by that time it was only 30%, nowadays it's 50%, that the galleries collects of the total price. So they approached me in the computing center, you know, because then the purchase would be without the galleries intervening. But I told them, no, this is not allowed. If I now sell anything, it must go through the gallerist. These are the rules of the trade. And I believe I was so much into real art that the fact that I was working in the computing center was not really important. You become a double. Your existence is a double existence. Fantastic. I wish to all of you that you get at least for some years in your life into such situations. Because when we are doing two kinds of work, then each one of them becomes much more interesting. Now, I'm, of course, nobody really working for ordinary wages. I was in the computing center. I was in a different kind of being paid, fortunately for me.
Yeah. So we now had some television and some small exhibitions. Now let's move to the United Kingdom, to London, where the Cybernetic Serendipity exhibition took place. This was a new kind of exhibition, right? How was it to enter such a room filled with such different artworks?
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. This was in London, that exhibition, Cybernetic Serendipity, in the ICA, by the time famous gallery, Institute of Contemporary Art is its title. And what you see here in the right image is some of the sculptures that had been done by cybernetic methods. It is not really known to which extent was that cybernetic. It was programmed. The fact that the authors of this called it cybernetic had to do with the institute where they showed this, which was an institute of cybernetics. They were behind this. At the wall behind you see some of my drawings. So the sculptures took much more of the attention. It's not really known how many people came to that exhibition. In 1968 it happened. The estimates are between 40 and 60,000. The exhibition was on for 2 months. That's quite a success. No, when the work that was shown had the computer as the background, as the creative, should I say so, background. And that exhibition, 68 in London, marks the breakthrough internationally of art done by computer. I should mention one thing, because that is so often forgotten when the history of cybernetic serendipity is, and by the way, serendipity, nobody understood that word. What the hell is it? There had been an Arabic prince by the name of Serendip, and he, as many Arabic princes do, they did not work, they did nothing, no, because they exploited other people. So he invented that, or people used his name, Serendip, for serendipity as the art of doing something fantastic that nobody is interested in. Nonsense, no? Anyway, okay, back here.
And pointing out that it's not just the Arabic princes, but yep, probably okay, all of them. Yep. You mentioned it had an international influence, and it's actually interesting that in the year after that, we now have another exhibition, The Tendencies 4, in a series of exhibitions that were on non-computer generated work, now with the new aesthetics in based on using computers. And this was in a different place. It was in Zagreb. And there we can actually see that the Iron Curtain, where the it was called Yugoslavia, as far as I recall from my
not
history.
Not only called, but it was Yugoslavia.
Yeah. And they were sort of in between. They didn't really go to one of either blocks. Mm-hmm. You were, I believe, the only person that exhibited in both places.
Yeah.
How was the feeling different? So we have the cybernetic serendipity, and we have this tendencies for.
Yeah, it was great. I must admit, no, I felt strong, no, like hell. And the anecdote behind is really nice. London cybernetic serendipity was opened on the 2nd of August 1968, and on the 3rd and 4th of August, 2 days later, there was a preparatory meeting, a little colloquium they called it, 3rd and 4th of August 68. A year later then in Zagreb was an exhibition of computer art. So I felt that the Yugoslavian event was more important than the London event. And therefore, I went to the Zagreb show, and only on my way back, I went through London on my way of emigrating to Canada. So I left purposefully Germany, because Germany was a horrible country, with a horrible history, the most horrible history of all countries in the world. You know what I'm speaking of. And therefore, it was great to have the chance to go to Canada. For which reason? I had not applied and nothing because of I had been doing computer art. So they invited me, come and continue doing what you did. Fantastic. No?
Yeah. Continuing with what you did, there's a question from the audience. I cannot understand it. Perhaps we can do it in the question session?
No questions now.
Okay, no questions now. We will try to give an overview of what happened after that. We will start right there with what you did. It's very difficult to cover everything here at this point. We will try to look at some interesting aspects, and you can fill in the rest. What you did was write an essay in the magazine of the Computer Art Society. There should be no computer art. Can you quickly and shortly explain why shouldn't there?
By the time I had become an active communist, Kommunistischer Bund Westdeutschland, I was a member of, a leading member, I believe. And therefore, in 1971, I wrote this article. Why? Because using computers to produce aesthetic objects was, in my then understanding, a way of getting computers into a field in culture that was not considered to be dangerous. Computers are machines to exploit and suppress people. I believe this up to now. And I was using computers to do something funny, art. Aha! I now realized in 1971 that I was part of helping people to feel okay when they get suppressed by this kind of machinery. Therefore, this article.
And now, I have an exhibit which relates to something that happened some 15 years after that. There's pictures you made. How can that be? You said there should be no computer art. Why should there be computer art? Why are you doing computer art now?
Yeah.
Do you want us to be oppressed?
Yes. In 1984, The editor of a cultural magazine that we, the Communist Bund of Westdeutschland, published. And he asked me in 1984, oh, Frieder, he had learned now that I had this background in computer art. Frieder, I have read that you have done these things. Why don't you write a paper for Umbruch, that was the KBW cultural magazine? And this I did under this title, no? There should be no computer art. Why? Because I was now convinced that this all is, as I said before, one part of suppressing and exploiting people. And I wanted to tell the world that I now believe this way. Later I returned. No? And I do graphics by computer even now, or again.
Yeah. Mm. Something else happened in 1984. Apart from the first Congress, I was told, which is actually probably quite related to the media revolution. We've got an example picture here. You have a Mac, I think it's 2 years later, like the next Macintosh model after that, but it's quite old and it looks interesting.
This Macintosh is from 1984.
Okay, I might be off by 2 years. This is a new development that transformed where this sort of art could take place. So we move now from having those big machines and, for example, this sort of personal computer being used in new ways or more accessible to other people. And we can see that people are trying to look at those devices, try to hack them, and so on. We know this how the story continues. It's actually an interesting story that we cannot tell in complete detail, but I try to summarize it because it's really interesting. So we start off with the Manhattan Project, where their chief scientist, Vannevar Bush, was thinking about how can we use those scientists, how can we improve science, and devised a machine called the MEMEX, which would use some storage mechanisms to exchange knowledge. That went on to someone called Douglas Engelbart with a team who created an online system, NLS, using those ideas that he read in a paper. And that continues, a lot of things happened there. So we have like a computer mouse, we now have documents editable by several people at the same time. We've got presentations on computers. So a lot of things happening at the same time. This work, and actually large parts of the team, were taken over by Douglas Engelbart, who had another approach from working with children. So they tried to devise a computer that was easy to use. So rather perhaps fulfilling the very difficult task or sort of thing to be able to be used by children, which is quite difficult to make them happy. And thinking about this idea, they had this concept of let's make some computer with a flat screen that can be easily carried around, with a keyboard on the bottom. Actually, we could also try to remove the keyboard and use those new touch-based input devices. It would have a liblink where you get to the library, have a connection to the library, can download your books or interesting things and have them on your device. You could play games there. We also have some tape memory to store things. But other than that, it's actually quite close to what we now have in a lot of pockets. What they did was realize this is a little expensive at this point of time. Let's try to use hardware we actually have and can use, and they created basically the personal computer. So we took a small detour, end up with a big screen, very heavy, and some computing capability attached to it with like a mouse and keyboard. And a lot of people started using those devices to make art of their own. We now have the internet revolution after that, where people got connected. So we're sort of leaving this field of it being restricted to a very brief set of people and now have it accessible to a lot. Something new happened after this internet revolution, and I think it's a good time to pick up on the development of there being a history of computer art. And in the German area, at least, we have made out two books that mark this change around the millennium. So we've got the Anfänge der Computerkunst, the beginnings of computer art, and Das Ende der Kunstgeschichte, the end of art history, which is interesting in the sense that one tries to explain the story from the technical point of view, and we have someone who's like an expert on how art works and sort of looks at this turning point over there.
Interesting thing is that these two books appeared in the same year. Two totally different aspects, I believe, totally different.
And now being able to look at this from like that being its own thing, we actually have something you can do in, can do right now. There's a couple of things that are worth mentioning, I would say. So we've got a whole museum, the Ars Electronica. What's good about the Ars Electronica in two sentences?
I have been represented there, and you probably know. so you can't help, no? When they invite you, you go along with it. Leonardo Page is the bi-monthly journal, little journal only, of the Computer Art Society. Something like this exists. No, and Kunsthalle Bremen, I'm sorry to say, has more than 1,000 computer drawings, the largest collection in the world of this kind of art.
I mean, another notable collection, I believe, is the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. They also have some.
Of course, they cannot compete.
Naturally. And in the Congress sphere, there is one talk I would specifically like to mention and recommend by Andy Piper, who spoke about sort of this same topic from a much more applied perspective, looking at different plotters, a very, very bad word for that. We prefer drawing machines, I believe, Zeichenmaschinen. But did awesome work on explaining how you can make it yourself. You can get a kit with like two motors and some pieces of wood to make your own drawings with like a very simple pen taped to it with like, very, very inexpensive tech. You've got an overview of more sophisticated machinery that's out there today and a lot of open source projects and cool things that can be done with this sort of art. And now we tried to be a little earlier to allow for more questions, because my personal experience with Frieder is that we spend some time together, either previously in lectures or now working on this talk in your office, or I think we even had a living room in between, where we just end up with an interesting question, previously to me unheard anecdotes from your time. So if there's some, I think we can end it here. You can contact us. We are both available at our university emails. And thank you.